You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Katie Frankowitz. The Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission has voted to deny a petition to implement a sweeping new set of rules around the deployment of gear used in Dungeness crab fishing. KLCC's Brian Bayhuth reports.
With whale entanglements on the rise, last December, a coalition of four conservation groups petitioned the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission to adopt sweeping new gear deployment and equipment rules for Oregon's Dungeness crab fishing fleet. Gary Ripka is a commercial crabber based in Newport and president of the Oregon Coast Crab Association. He told the commission the new rules would put smaller operations out of business and that the crabbing fleet wants to work with ongoing state efforts to end entanglements and stay in business.
I need you to understand, if you stand with us today, and if you reject this petition, trust the collaborative process that we managed together for generations, we have your back. We will work with you. We'll be your partners.
The commission voted 6-1 to deny the petition and urged the ODFW to continue efforts toward developing a broader conservation plan. I'm Brian Bayhuth reporting.
Tina Kotek has requested a major disaster declaration from President Trump for nine Oregon counties still dealing with the aftermath of last December's storms. The severe weather brought widespread flooding and landslides that caused more than $15 million in damages across the state. Lily Lessie is with the Oregon Department of Emergency Management. She helped with the state's preliminary damage assessment used in the governor's request.
This is going to cover pretty much any type of public infrastructure you can imagine. So we're looking at debris removal from public right-of-way. We're looking at emergency protective measures like fire and police overtime.
Kotek requested aid for Clackamas, Hood River, Lane, Lincoln, Lynn, Polk, Tillamook, Union, and Yamhill counties. You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. Up next, we have Let's Talk Tillamook, which talks about major issues through the lens of local people. Let's Talk Tillamook is a partner of KMUN, and we're grateful to them for providing us with this programming. If you have any feedback about our programming options, send us an email to feedback@kmun.org. Now, Let's Talk Tillamook.
This is Shayna Peterson with Let's Talk Tillamook. Today we're talking about veterans, what's working, what's changing, and what these shifts mean for veterans and families here on the Oregon coast and across the country. Joining me is Dr. Kai Hunter, Oregon Marine veteran and CEO of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, one of the nation's leading voices on veterans policy, healthcare access, and advocacy. Together, we'll look at the current state of veteran services, how federal decisions are affecting care and benefits, what veterans are experiencing on the ground, and what communities can do to help.
Good afternoon. This is Shayna with Let's Talk Tillamook, and today Dr. Kai Hunter is with us, Oregon Marine veteran, CEO of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Thanks for joining us, Kai. Tell us a little bit about your background and what inspired your advocacy work for our veterans.
Thank you so much for having me. It is wonderful to be able to share both my story and the work we're doing for veterans, especially, you know, here in my home state of Oregon. So I'm a Marine by my background. I was a Cobra pilot. That's an attack helicopter pilot with many, many tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, really during the height of those wars. And then I finished up my active duty time in the Office of Legislative Affairs at the House of Representatives. And that was a really, really eye-opening time for me. You know, I was a Marine. I was used to, like, you know, going down range and doing the hard warfighting thing, right? Where I showed up on the Hill, and I really learned, you know, how important policy and lawmaking is to the things that touch veterans' lives every single day. I was there on the Hill while we were going through the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, as well as the initial work around the repeal of women in ground combat exclusion. And one of the things that really stood out to me was the importance of really marrying both the data and research on public policy with advocates who can tell their stories and bring those data to light in meaningful ways. And so when I was looking at what I was going to do next, what really hit me was I need to go into public policy research in order to do better advocacy, because there were so many topics, whether it was women in the military, whether it was how we are seeing a lot of changes in our personnel policies, that didn't have that hard, robust research behind it. There were a lot of stories, and people were coming with their stories, but they didn't have the research. And so I took it upon myself to say, I'm going to go do the research so that I can better arm the people with the best stories out there, to include myself, right? As a woman who had had multiple combat tours, I didn't want to go and just say, here I am as a sort of N of one, someone by myself, but really to be able to say, you know, my experience is indicative of the larger experiences that women had, and here's how we can address policy changes to both improve the lives of those that are serving, life after service, and continue to attract the best and brightest to defend our country.
Kai, I'm so glad that we're getting in touch. I mean, I appreciate your comments. I was wondering, what's the current status of our veteran services in America? What's working? Where are our veterans falling through the cracks?
Yeah, so I think if we look at the state of veteran services, we see both some amazing, amazing success stories and some areas that we're really struggling to keep up. I think on the success side, because there's enough doom and gloom out there, we should talk about some happy things that we have here right now. You know, the development and implementation of the post-9/11 GI Bill has been a complete and utter game changer when we look at veterans' employability and lifelong earning potentials and their abilities to, you know, not just serve but thrive after service. And, you know, the post-9/11 GI Bill expanded educational opportunities. It made it easier to go back to school full time, as well as to be able to pass those opportunities along to children and families of individuals who have served. And so I think, you know, that's a real success story of veterans getting education, getting job placement, also programs like SteelBridge that pair service members when they're separating with organizations across the country in basically a 6-month internship that help with that civilian transition. We're seeing great, great success stories. And I think in that education and even employability side, we see things really well. We've also seen real strong improvements in healthcare for women veterans recently with the passage of the Deborah Sampson Act, which ensured that all VA facilities had female primary care providers available so that if women were more comfortable with a female primary care provider, they were able to get one. It also recently has been enacted that women can make gynecology appointments without referrals, right? So to be able to go direct to get women-specific health care. We've seen improvements in mammogram screenings for women, particularly those that were exposed to burn pits. And then we know that there's a higher incident rate of breast cancer. So lots more early detection, right? So we've got, I think, some positive stories that we've seen, particularly in serving women veterans. Also more broadly, we've seen with the PACT Act, it has opened up VA care for tens of thousands of veterans who otherwise wouldn't have known they were eligible. Really, you know, the outreach from the PACT Act to people who didn't know what they were eligible for and didn't understand the importance of VA care has really expanded that care and access. And that's something, again, that's absolutely fantastic. But that does not mean that everything is great. I think we've seen some, you know, concerning or troubling action even in the recent years. The most recent reporting from the VA comes out that there are tens of thousands of vacant mental health provider positions. Oh. And we know that mental health is very, very important. We know from the surveys that we do of our members that veterans want to get mental health care from a VA provider because they are culturally competent to understand the circumstances that our veterans went through. And the VA hasn't been able to recruit or retain these positions. And so veterans are falling through the cracks there. We've seen a shifting of care from VA direct care to community care in a way that has increased wait times, particularly for mental health care appointments, where now it's looking at 35 to 40 days to get an initial screening appointment because resources have been shifted away. Well, and oh, Go ahead.
No, that's just what I was going to ask you about the impact of this administration. There's some policy decisions and budget priorities, and that is particularly when it comes to health care and disability benefits and mental health services. When you say 35, 45-day wait, that's critical. It should be the next day.
And so we've seen that. We've also seen, the shifting of funds from the, shifting of funds from VA direct care into community care has made wait times worse, particularly in rural areas. And I think, here in Oregon, I think people often think of Oregon as like Portland and Eugene, right? Big cities, which are great, but there are thousands of rural veterans in Oregon.
Traveling over that hill in the wintertime is no picnic, that's for sure.
Oh, exactly, right? Like to be able to get over the pass, which sometimes aren't even plowed in the wintertime.
Yeah.
And so it's not even being able to get there. And these are also, the rural areas really relied on VA direct care because in many cases, they don't have community care available, right? They don't have, and when we talk about women's health care, the VA has been great at investing and ensuring there's access to women's health care because in many of these rural communities, the VA was the place where women could go to get health care, right? That is the spot where women were able to go get their care. So it's troubling, it's concerning. I think another big concern we have is that there hasn't been a lot of transparency when we talk about, positions that have been cut or jobs lost. Like, we're not 100% sure who those people are.
Oh.
Right? And where they've come from. And when we say that it's not essential, well, who sort of deems who is or isn't essential? Is a janitor that keeps the medical facility clean essential? I think so.
Yeah. Well, one would. Thinking about that, what are you hearing from our veterans? What does it look like on the ground for our veteran and their families?
Yeah, so I think, there are some things that we're hearing that are very in line with what I'd say the same issues that we're hearing from the American people, right? If we ask our veterans, and we actually just wrapped up a policy priority survey for them of like, what are the things that you are most concerned about or with, access to healthcare and economic opportunities were the top two. And I think that's what we see sort of right now as like broadly across the country, people are concerned about healthcare access and jobs, right? Inflation, housing, these are real issues and concerns that are faced by all Americans as well as veterans. And I think veterans have some unique concerns about both. I mean, we've seen we're starting to see cuts to VA healthcare, a lot of which people rely on for their healthcare for themselves and their family. There's also been discussions of using the VA home loans and making VA home loans more expensive in order to offset some of the costs to veterans' healthcare. And there's a lot of concern about that. VA home loans are largely a reason that many veterans can buy a house, right?
That's how my brother got his first home and his second.
Exactly. I've used it on three homes now, right? Yeah. I've used it. It's actually why my husband and I were able to move to Oregon was the VA loan. And the ability to get a lower interest rate and work with other lenders, we got here much more easily than any other way. And when we think about military service as actually being one of the primary ways to break cycles of intergenerational poverty, homeownership is one of those ways, right? And so there's a lot of concern about what's happening with home loans. And also we're hearing a lot of concern from our veterans about the use of the military domestically right now. We're getting a lot of feedback concerns about how are the people who are being deployed to American cities, how are they going to be taken care of after this, right? And whether you agree or disagree with the use of the Guard or active duty troops in U.S. cities, we're creating a completely different type of veteran than we've had before in terms of what it means for mental health, what types of PTSD they might be experiencing coming out of this, and how the politicalization and the political rhetoric surrounding their actions may have long-term impacts on their health and well-being. And our Our memberships are very, very concerned about that.
As they should be. What should our veterans, you know, especially those in rural communities like Tillamook and here on the coast, what could they be doing right now to protect their benefits, maybe to access care, make their voices heard? What can our communities do to help support them?
Oh, absolutely. So first and foremost, you know, ensure that you are enrolled in the VA system. I think a lot of veterans don't realize that they have to enroll, right? They have to sign up. So sign up so you get in the system, get on the PACT Act registry, even if you're not an Iraq or Afghanistan veteran, because it does expand to exposures of things like Agent Orange, as well as it includes some areas of domestic housing, right? That's another thing we don't talk about a lot, right? But contaminations from just military bases and potentially base housing. So make sure that you're registered and signed up from an individual level and perspective. And Oregon has some really, really amazing veteran service officers who work, you know, with veterans to help navigate their cases and make sure that they're getting access to their benefits. I would also encourage, and it's a little self-serving because I'm the CEO of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, but I would encourage everyone to join. So we're at IAVA.org. Anyone can join. It is free to join. You don't have to be a veteran of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. You don't even have to be a veteran to join. And I say that for a few reasons. Like, there are some things that apply, some benefits that apply just to our veteran members. But for things like getting educated on what is happening and the actions that you can take to reach out to your lawmakers and make your voice heard, that's a reason to join us, right? You'll get up-to-date information on what bills are coming before Congress, how you should be able to pressure your legislators and lawmakers, what you can bring to local town halls to be able to say, this is how we actually, you know, we care about our veterans and here's how we want to support them, because that's very, very important. I think as well, you know, joining, there's opportunities and toolkits to host your own community gatherings and town halls to, again, become better educated on this. One thing when we think about veterans, you know, we're becoming a smaller and smaller percentage of the overall population. And so we also need our non-veteran allies to help us, right? To help advocate for us, to be part of the solution and to really learn, like, why having veterans in your community and supporting veterans in your community matters.
Well, I tell you, Kai, it's so simple at IAVA.org. I just joined.
Oh, wonderful. It's great. Yes. Welcome. And membership is free, and it's always free, right? So there's no dues required.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to share with us. And we're going to get this information out for people, Dr. Hunter. Kai, is there anything else before I let you go back to doing your good work that you want to add?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's really important to understand for the folks who aren't veterans who are on the call that veterans are not a monolith, right? We are a diverse group of people that is as diverse as this country. So for anyone who's not a veteran, I would encourage you to get to know some of the veterans in your community to understand why, you know, why they served, what their motivations are for serving, and how they want to give back into their community. Because building, you know, one thing veterans are very good at is building community wherever they go, right? We all got stuck with people that we didn't know before.
Exactly.
And figured out how to make it work. So really would encourage everyone to get to know the veterans in their community and the ways in which we can all continue to support each other.
Sounds wonderful. Kai, thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
And thank you for all you do.
That's Dr. Kai Hunter, Oregon Marine veteran and CEO of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. If you'd like more information on veterans advocacy, policy updates, or ways to get involved, you can visit IAVA.org. You can also listen to the full Let's Talk Tillamook interview on our YouTube channel. And for veterans here on the Oregon coast, local veterans service officers can help you navigate enrollment, benefits, and care options. I'm Shana Peterson. This has been Let's Talk Tillamook, bringing important conversations home to our community.
You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. That's all from us today. We'll see you tomorrow.